You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey guys, welcome to episode number 4 of the Reach Right podcast. I'm Thomas Costello, and again with me today is...
Ian Hyatt. How's it going, guys?
Going good here. Looking forward to our conversation here today. Excited to talk about our topic at hand.
Yeah.
The conversation that we're going to be having today is about the biggest website mistakes that we see. And we had like a list of dozens, and we were able to narrow it down to only 11. And that was a challenge, I would say, right?
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah, we see all kinds of the some of the strangest website decisions out there. And Ian and I have been in this industry helping churches with their websites since 2000. And when did you start?
My goodness, must have been 2006.
Yeah, 2006. I came along in 2007, starting doing some of this kind of stuff. And yeah, we've seen our fair share. The list has changed a little bit over the years, I would say, too, huh?
It's changed, but surprisingly, some of the items on the list have been age-old issues, if I could put it that way.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think the one we don't see very much anymore is the Flash websites. I remember when we came on and started doing this in the mid-2000s, there were the crazy Flash intro was in its heyday, and man, churches just ate that stuff up, didn't they? They wanted the man with the Flash, right, is what they were looking for.
That's right. And actually, I remember someone actually saying that. Asked if I was the man with the Flash, or asked one of us at our company back then. And then, some of these websites with all the Flash, I mean, you thought you were at in an arcade or something, just seeing some of the stuff going on. But we don't see that too much anymore.
Yeah, so we don't even have to include that one anymore, but there you get a bonus mistake. If you have Flash on your website, don't do it anymore because there's all kinds of reasons. Chief of them now is that Google will be eliminating the Flash player from Chrome, the most used web browser, at the end of this year, end of 2020. So if you haven't already made that switch, then please do that. So that's not even one of the 11, though, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's it. So, well, let's dig into them. Why don't you go ahead and kick us off, Ian?
Yeah, looking forward to this. Ought to be fun, and hopefully we'll have a few giggles out of this, even though at the end of the day, it's something, you know, serious, obviously, because churches need to get great results with their websites. So, I guess the one that I'm surprised is still around, because there's been, I don't know how much data, how many experts have put out articles on this being one of the biggest no-nos. We've seen this since the very beginning of church websites ever being created on the internet, is you get to the homepage and it's a giant picture, or the main image is a picture of their wonderful building. Mm-hmm. And that is the main focus of, you know, the whole opening image. So, so obviously this has been a big church marketing no-no for a while, because people are attracted to people like them and other people more than a building, even though we know we love our buildings and how we long for those in this season that we're going to be able to go back to buildings. But that is obviously not God has given us as pastors and ministry leaders and just believers, obviously a bigger vision than just the building. It's more about reaching people, right? So,
no, absolutely. Yeah, we've been saying that forever. As long as I've been a Christian, we've been told that the church is not the building. And that's, I think, we're really learning that right now in this coronavirus season, is that the church can't be the building, because we can't go in the building for a lot of us. And it's something that we're seeing everywhere. But yeah, you're right. I still see this. I will make one caveat to this. I think that there is a very small percentage of churches where this might make sense to have a picture of the building, and it is for that iconic downtown, everybody knows about it kind of church that's right in the center of the city where it's really a landmark. So there's maybe 100 or so of these in the United States, and you know, maybe overseas there's some too. But yeah, so it's that you could make a case for it maybe, but man, by and large, you want pictures of people within your church to be there. And I will say that people within your church, that's the important part of that statement is that this could have been one we added too, but having all kinds of stock photos of people that aren't in your church. We do this looking at lots of websites. We see the same families that apparently go to hundreds of different churches all over the country, and they
or they're a part of the wall at Target or Walmart too. Those same people.
Yeah, the same people
everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but no building, and that'll actually bring me to number two, I think, which is the other mistake we see quite often is that we see a big picture or like a pastor-centric kind of a homepage. So big picture of the lead pastor of the church as the main image that's there on the homepage for a church. And it should be obvious to us that while the pastor, obviously it's important to make some kind of a connection with him or her on the website. Mm. I think it's important that it's not the main focus, that his face is not the main focus when someone first gets onto there. It just doesn't work. And what we tell people usually, if you were looking for something to do instead, maybe you have one of those churches with a building or a pastor as the main image on the homepage there. Mm-hmm. I think what we were looking for more than anything is people caught in the act of doing the values of your church. I think that's the way we put it to clients usually is that's the photography that belongs on that homepage. If you have still imagery, we really love it when churches do video backgrounds and we love putting those together for churches. But imagery of people caught in the act of doing the values of the church. Would you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. And actually, I love that we added this item because I have a really funny story to tell about this this very thing. Years ago, I remember coming across a church website that not only was it a giant image of the pastor in a very nice suit, which is nothing wrong with wearing a nice suit as a pastor, but but he was leaning against a golden pillar, and I'm pretty sure the golden pillar was not a part of the church building. But the best thing about it was not only leaning against a golden pillar, but right underneath his feet below the image was where you entered in the amount you wanted to give to the
perfect.
Church. And so if you think about the impression there that could give to a someone who's unchurched or maybe someone, we know there's plenty about people out there that think that the church is just after their money. Well, those people will not be attending that church based on what they would see on the website. And so that was one of the funniest things I've personally seen, and you know, goes without saying, I consulted them to go a different direction that approach. But to your point about the church building, when there are some exceptions, we know there's big personality pastors. There's ministries that are geared around the pastor, like T.D. Jakes. You think of him, you know, you think of many others, and nothing wrong with having a primary image, but still, you know, even with those types of ministries, you still want to be focused on the people you're trying to reach and not make it all about one person.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you think of the biggest pastors or most famous pastors in the country, you don't see T.D. Jakes on the homepage of the Potter's House. You don't see Stephen Furtick as the main image. Now, they'll have imagery of him preaching and those kinds of things because that's one of the values of the church at Elevation Church is teaching the word. And so you'll see some video of those kinds of things happening. But Brian Houston at Hillsong, he's not the main image on the homepage of Hillsong's website. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of wisdom in something like that. So why don't you tackle number three?
Number three, yeah. So big drop-down menu with multiple tiers all over the place. Now, there still can be a place for drop-down menus on specific websites, and that's a whole nother subject, but it is, for the most part, we feel these days, unnecessary to first of all, you don't want to have deep drop-down menus, but and sometimes you don't need drop-down menus at all. As a matter of fact, I know with the sites that we do, we try to avoid them at all cost if we can. And the reason why, number one reason is that people are primarily browsing on mobile devices, on phones, and people are less patient now too from their phones. They're needing to get information quick, and you got to engage them quick. And if you make them dig and have to click around to find, you know, whatever content that they're looking for, they quickly lose patience. And there's a lot of other reasons for this too. I mean, you just don't want a busy website. You want to make it very intuitive, you know, for mobile. And I'm sure you have some thoughts on this item too, for sure.
Yeah, I think that that's really important. So just so we're clear, when we talk about multiple tiers of dropdowns or just dropdowns in general, so this is referring to the navigation on a website where you would hover your mouse, and when you hover your mouse, it drops down and has a list of other links. And then what's even worse than that is when you drop down on that, and then even deeper sets of links. And we've seen websites before with like four different tiers where you have to accurately navigate your mouse down this path. And we've all had that frustration probably before. But yeah, like you were saying, this is just really not an intuitive experience for people on a mobile device. And we have the benefit of seeing all of our church website clients. We get to see their analytics, and we're a little bit over 60% of the traffic right now is happening on mobile devices. So really, and this kind of gets into a whole nother conversation. We can talk about this in a later episode, but we do encourage churches to have a mobile first approach on this, on their website, that you have to think of it as if the primary way people will access this is not on a laptop or a desktop, but on their phone is the main way that people are going to look at your site nowadays. And so it's just not intuitive. And usually what they do on mobile sites now is that they'll have what you call a hamburger menu, which is those three lines. So think of it as bun, meat, bun, kind of that hamburger, those three lines. That's where you click to find the menu for the site. And then you would drop down in that, and you'd still have to navigate a whole bunch of pages. Here's the deal, is that we think that the right way to set up a site nowadays is not having dozens and dozens of pages for most churches, that you need to have a really deep menu like that. I think churches are better off having longer pages with more content on them that has to be well designed. So think of it like the way that you use Instagram or Facebook. They, you don't click from post to post to post to see what people say. You just keep scrolling. And that's the idea. We'd love to get that across to our website clients, and we encourage them. Let's not try to make people click from page to page to learn your vision, another page for your values, another page for what you believe, another page for your 2020 vision. Let's put that all in one spot and design it well. And it just makes a better experience for people, I would say.
Yeah, and one last thought on that too is just that I think we learned too along the way with church websites is that you don't need a page for just your vision and values with it. That might be only, you know, three sentences, you know, so it doesn't need its own real, you know, a whole page for its own real estate. So
That's it. And here's the secret too. Nobody ever reads that stuff. Unless you, if you design it well and put some graphic and those kind of elements in there, those kinds of elements, I think you can get some people to engage with it. But when you have a long block of text that's just like that, I think that it's, it just, people don't really ever read those things there is what we find. So, and that brings me to number four, which is, this is a temptation that a lot of churches have. And frankly, this is this one is tied to what used to be good advice, but is now not good advice. And the mistake that people make, number four, is they put all of their church's info on the homepage of the site. Now, let me be clear about what I mean about this. I'm not saying don't have your contact information and that kind of stuff on the website, on the homepage of the site. You want that anywhere and everywhere on the site, probably at the bottom of every single page. So that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm getting at is that sometimes churches have tried to just stuff all of their biggest, the things that are most important to them right there on the homepage and get it all so you answer every question. And we used to try to tell people to do that. That was an encouragement we say is try to answer all their questions right there so they don't have to click deeper. And there's a few reasons why that doesn't really work nowadays. And I think one of the biggest ones is that one of the key metrics that Google measures when they're trying to rate the importance importance of a site and therefore where you rank on search engines is how deep into the site someone clicks. And if someone gets their question answered on the homepage and then clicks off and doesn't stay on your website, Google thinks that that wasn't an effective trip to your website, that they probably didn't get the information that they were looking for, and therefore they start to rank you lower with those things. And really, what we want them to do is we want to tease them with information and help them to get deeper into the website
right.
and click in and try to answer those questions in greater detail on inside pages.
Yeah, that's it. No, I totally agree. And I think also getting back to like we were similarly discussing with the drop-down menus is people are very impatient. And when they come to a home page, if you information dump, if that's the right term to use, then they're going to check out right away. You know, and it needs to be simple, engaging. And Barna came out with this statistic, and this is an old statistic. It's been around for a while, and it still holds true that you really only have maybe 4 to 6 seconds to get someone engaged from your home page. So again, if all of that's just going to be a ton of information, and most of the time, like you said, the temptation is to put all of the church's information in, and we don't try to do this in church, but we naturally can get very inward focused and forget about the new person we're trying to reach. So once all that information's just dumped there too, they're just going to kind of check out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So why don't you hit number five?
Yeah, number five. This is actually a newer one, one-page website. When I say a newer one, these one-page websites have been out for a little while. When we started seeing that mobile browsing was taking off and everyone was starting to do Google searches from their phones years ago, these one-page sites became very popular, and the idea behind them was good. It was, let's keep it very simple. You know, churches and companies alike were realizing we don't need to have a website that's busy with a ton of pages, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
So let's just simplify and let's just have one page, because as you say, it is acceptable now to have a longer, more well-designed page because people are used to thumbing down on social media and so on. So that is acceptable and a good strategy. But the problem and where we missed the mark with this was that we erred on going too simple, and we stripped the content, because there is still that saying that holds true in the web world that content is king. Yep. And there's different reasons for that. We could tackle that in a whole nother episode as well, Thomas. But the fact is that when you're too minimalistic, you know, you don't have enough content that's of interest to the person that you're trying to reach. And so what happens here is just that you have this one home page and it just kind of anchors down and has a very short blurb, which again would be a good strategy, you know, to have a short blurb like you just mentioned on the homepage that leads them to another page. But these sites stop with just that short blurb and don't deliver enough content.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that this is primarily, I agree with you that it was a good idea to try and simplify things. But I think the problem is mostly from a search engine optimization standpoint.
Right.
For those of you that haven't seen one of these, or maybe you have, but you just don't know what we're talking about, these are one of those longer sites where usually they have a navigation at the top. But like Ian mentioned, he said it anchors down. So what that means is that you click on that on a piece of the navigation and it'll automatically take you to one section of that same page.
Yeah.
But really, and that's nice, but the problem is from a search engine optimization standpoint, it's hard to make that one page rank for every keyword that you could want to rank for a church. And so
that's right.
You have lots and lots of content on there, but I just think that what you're looking for is you need to have at least some different pages that target different kind of information that a church might want to deliver out there. People might be searching for online. So
right.
From an SEO perspective, it just doesn't really cut the mustard in that way there. So, and that brings us to number six. Number six is one of, it's one that we see a lot. And I think it has to do with the number six, here's what it is. It's putting unnecessary staff members onto your staff page. I think that there is a fine balance that churches have to walk as to who they put onto the staff section of their website. And here's what the rule is that we think the right number or the right number of people is whoever is going to be on the platform and whoever is going to have an interaction with a first-time visitor. Those are the people that you want to make sure are on the staff page. So that usually is the lead pastor, obviously. Usually your worship leader, that person will be on there. Usually the person that does the announcements, if you have someone who usually does that, or one of your other pastors that does that part. And then you'll want to have people that interact with kids. Right. So children's director or pastor, youth director or pastor, having those people in the staff section on your website. Now, who you don't want to have is every single person that leads every single ministry within your entire church. Like, so your backup lead usher on days that your main usher can't be there probably doesn't need to be on your staff page. And the reason for that is that visitors probably don't really care that much who that person is, and they don't need to make a connection with that person before they show up for the first time. So your thoughts?
Oh, I totally agree, and starting to smile and almost chuckle when you were saying that, because another good story to tell is, and one other point in addition to this is not only limiting the amount of people, make sure the people look friendly on this page. I remember seeing it is a great idea to have a children's pastor on there, but let's make sure they look nice and that they like children. We had seen a picture of a very, I don't know how else to put it, but a very mean old lady that looked like, if I was thinking, if I were looking for a church, and you know, I have elementary age kids, and if we were going to this church and I knew she was, my kids were going to be under her care, she looked like she wanted to pinch them or spank them or something. And so that's one thing too, is that let's have friendly people, minimize the amount of people, but friendly people. And
it's funny. I think I know who you're talking about before we even get into this here. And I think I think she had a name. We won't say it on this because I don't want to pick on anybody, but I think she had a name that sounded scary too, if I remember right. Yeah. But anyway, that is sound advice.
But a warm face can erase a scary name. So both together dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. So, go for it. Mistake number seven.
Yeah. So, putting individual emails on the website, and you know, everyone meant well. Again, years ago, this was not as big of a deal as it is now, and we'll talk about that. But individual staff emails or you know, ministry leader emails throughout the website, you know, the idea, again, it was a noble thought, because, you know, obviously if I had questions about the youth ministry, I'd love to message the youth pastor, you know, get in touch with them, get to know them, what they have in store, all of that but now obviously we're seeing much more spamming going on, much more targeting of individual email addresses and contact information than ever before. So you make yourself very vulnerable to spamming when you do that. So and I know you could, you know, elaborate a little bit more. There's probably other reasons, but we find a better strategy would be something just like a contact form to fill out. And there's some other ideas too. But
it really is all about the spam for me. I think that's something that it's not just that there's people that are looking you up and writing you emails, you know, salespeople or whatever, but there are systems out there that go out and scrape websites and just look for any real email box, take it and sell it to people that will send out spam. And you want to do everything you possibly can to stay off of that kind of a list there. So churches, you if you're leading a church, you should not have your email address, certainly not your personal one. You probably want to have one on the site. So, you know, info@yourchurch.com, that kind of a website or that kind of an email address should be out there. But yeah, you're exactly right. I think forms are the right way, and not just a generic contact form. Like if it's you shouldn't just have the same form everywhere. If you have a if you want to put your youth pastor's email address in the youth section of the website, well, then have a youth specific form that right. people can use to ask youth questions. And there's a few reasons why this is good too, because it gives you more information. Like, so when someone submits a form, you actually get all of their contact. You could ask for other pieces of contact information and other data points that you can use and keep connected with people that way. So yeah. And that actually is a good segue to mistake number 7 or number 8. And that is, and we see this all the time, is not having clear calls to action on every single section of the website. This is an example. So with an email address, what you're trying to get people to do is to, you're calling them to action to email somebody that's on your church staff. In most cases, we recommend doing a form, but that's an example of a call to action. And here's what we see so many churches making this mistake is that they will give lots and lots of information and not ask anybody to do something with that information. It's kind of like preaching a sermon, and you spend all of your time giving all, you wax eloquent and you deliver something beautiful and people are moved, and then you just end by saying, so
there
you go. So go ahead, Ian. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was gonna also just say, you know, you end by or just saying have a nice day, because basically you're almost you know, you're not trying to say goodbye to someone, but that's the next thing that they, you know, they think in their head. So it's either like a so dot 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 or just have a nice day. So
but and we do this all the time on church websites where we like, you know, we were talking before about vision and value statements. Yeah. I very rarely see churches use that and then ask people to do something. And that's like kind of the litmus test for whether or not content belongs on your website is there something I want someone to do as a result of seeing this content, right? Yep. So if I deliver my vision and values, is there a reason why I'm doing that? And what do I want people to do next? Now that I've read that, if someone read that and was inspired, what is their next step? And just asking people to do that. So the solution for most of the site is eat one of two things, click deeper and learn more. So like on the homepage, the call to action for every section is gonna be go deeper into the site, learn more about this here, dig in deeper. But then once we get past that, when you get into ministry sections of the site, mission sections, giving sections, the action, we have to ask people to do something.
Right.
When they see something about your small groups, don't make the mistake of just delivering a bunch of information about the what you think about small groups and where small groups are. Ask people to get involved. Ask them to take a step. That's what every church website should be doing in every section, is asking people to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, too, you know, we're not wanting to just, you know, get in their business and have a salesy approach. And I know some of the feedback I've heard or the concern that you know, a ministry leader or pastor would have in taking that approach is that, you know, we don't want to be pushy and make someone feel like they got to give us all their information. So if you're strategic about it, and again, you put out compelling, helpful content and you simply give them a warm greeting to respond, it actually shows that you want to hear from them instead.
Yep.
So I think that's just one good thing to note, is that, you know, there is some strategy behind it to you know, make sure it doesn't come off as pushy and so on. So that's not the intent. And if you do it right, no one's going to feel that way. So
That's it. That's good.
Well, good. Thomas, you want to tackle number 9?
Sure. Yeah, I can do number 9.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's number 9 is the mistake we see people make is sending people off of your website to do one of those calls to action. So you spend the time to give them a call to action, you ask them to do something, and then you send them off of your website. And the one that I'm seeing that the most with right now in this coronavirus season, where a lot of us are doing church online and some of those things, is sending them off of your site to go to your video content.
Yeah.
This is a huge no-no. know. One of the things that we talked about before that Google's looking at when they see a visitor to your website is they want to know how many pages they go into. Do they just go on the homepage and leave? And then they're also looking for the amount of time that someone spends on your website. So if someone gets on your website and right on the homepage, you say you have a button that says watch live, and then they click off and go straight to YouTube or to the church online platform or whatever you guys are using for
Facebook, whatever, for your
live. Yeah, wherever it is, that is actually seen as a huge loss, because especially with online viewing like this, that's someone who is ready to spend 30 minutes on your website watching your entire service that way.
Yeah.
So we love YouTube. We're not against YouTube or Facebook. Use all those platforms, but you are doing yourself a huge disservice if you're sending people off of your site and making them go consume content elsewhere instead of doing it right there. And then here's the other thing too, is that when we keep them on your site, there's lots of other opportunities to interact with them. Like, so, you know, obviously inviting people to give when you maybe you're talking about giving at some point in your message there, asking people to respond, to get connected in some kind of a way, filling out visitor cards, all those things happen best on your platform, not on YouTube's or Facebook's.
Yeah, that's it. That's it exactly. And yeah, you just have so much more control over the content on a website also, you know, and what, when you have someone staying on the site and you have a, you know, captive audience there, you could really compel them to a lot of this helpful content that's somewhat difficult to do. We're not anti-social media, of course. Use social media, all of that, but you can have a lot more content that's helpful and a lot more control over that compared to social media too, and these other outlets. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, that's good. Yep, hit number 10 for us.
Yeah, it's a good segue to that too, because like we said, you know, people can also give more easily from your site. But what you want to do, make sure you don't do, is just have a direct link to giving without explaining anything about that. Getting back to the joke earlier, the example that I gave of the pastor with underneath his feet was the amount to give. Of course, that had its own visual explanation to it. But one of the worst things we often see is just a give link or an online giving link on a website. And as soon as someone clicks that, it just opens up right where they enter in their information and get straight to the giving. And instead, we know that so many people have the mindset of just, you know, the church is after my money. And you can sometimes communicate that that's all you are after if you don't have some sort of explanation or even storytelling, if we want to call it that, behind what it means to give at your church. And every church we know, you know, we know what it means scripturally to give. And it's good to actually outline a lot of that content. But it does mean people have different, different churches have different ideas of what giving means to them. And they have different things that they can show that that financial contributions will go towards. Like if your church is big on a specific outreach, let's have photos of that outreach reach in action and people being blessed by your ministry. If it's huge on kids ministry, you know, for parents to know that their giving is going to be, you know, and part of that is going to fund the kids ministry and how your own kids can be blessed more. Let's tell that story. So that's some good reasons to make sure that you're not just having a link that says give.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is another one of those things where we know this in person, right? Every church I've ever been to, when they're going to do the offering time, they don't just say, okay, give. Like, they don't just do that or just say, hey, offering time, and then just walk around with the buckets. They you give some explanation to it, right? You share a verse, you pray, you spend some time just kind of helping people understand that. And I think that that's so important, because we can't just assume that people understand that, especially online, because you're going to be interacting with people that have never stepped foot in your church before, right? They've never come in there. They don't know you. And we want to be careful. And again, I think we sometimes go overboard on our apologies and fear of speaking about giving. I think that's really important. It's an important act of worship, is giving. But I think it's also important that we just make sure we're explaining it and being clear about why we give and what it goes towards. And I think that's really important that churches don't make that mistake of just asking people to give directly and linking them right off of the site to get to a giving provider. So, all right, last one. Let me tackle this one here. Number 11 of the 11 mistakes that churches make on their website. It's big homepage sliders. We've seen these, and we have been guilty of these in our early part of our career, because this is what you did, is that the coolest thing you could do on a church website was having three images that would rotate, and they'd talk about your current sermon series, your big upcoming event, and some other call to action, like getting involved in youth ministry or something like that, what would be on there. And it is really just something that we've learned just from looking at traction on websites that it actually doesn't work. Having big images of what's happening or big images of sermons, people don't really care about that content as much as they care about, like we said already in this conversation, imagery of people caught in the act of doing the values of your church. That's the kind of stuff that we're looking for. I think what that does is when we have the big sliders that talk about sermon series and events, what those do is they turn us a little bit more inwards, right? Yeah. So it's answering the question that a lot of our members have, like what's our current sermon series? When is that event again?
The
that
next
kind of
event,
stuff.
Right.
And it's not really helping someone who's new to the fold or trying to learn what your church is all about, not helping them get to that next level there. So that's probably the big mistake that I see. And so many churches, the problem with these two is that they take up all of the real estate in most cases right when you get on the website. It's just you're accosted by these giant images of what's happening at the church there. So your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I think one of the things it does is it inadvertently it makes us have an inward focus on the website, because it just the natural tendency is what else can we fit in this slider? And it usually turns out to being, like you said, events or some other, you know, ministry initiative that's already going on internally or a membership class. And what that it just assumes that, you know, people are already interested in what you're doing when they come to your homepage, and they're not yet. You know, if it's that person that hasn't visited yet, they're not, for lack of a better word, sold yet on taking that next step. So you're almost just assuming they're interested in everything that you have going on. And then again, it gets back to that Barna stat that we talked about. Again, you only have a few seconds to get someone engaged, you know, from the homepage. So again, they're not looking to watch a slideshow at that point. And again, most people are coming from their phones now too, so they're even less patient there. And so, yeah, the compelling imagery of people caught in the act of worship and ministry, that's good. But also, if it's just one image that is focused on that person you're trying to reach, to where it says, this is about me, that's going to be more effective as well. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. No, that's good. And I think that the way I would say it is that I see a lot of churches making this mistake of that they try to cram these things in just to get as much as they possibly can in front of their audience before they click off of the website. And that's really, I'd rather tell one story really well than trying to throw a bunch of buckshot out there and see what sticks to people. So want to see the sermon? Want to get an event? Want to learn about youth? Want to learn about kids? That's the kind of the approach we do. We don't do that in our sermons, right? So we usually carefully craft our sermons for Sunday mornings when we preach. They're usually crafted, and we try to good pastors that preach well, they edit them down and they try to keep them short and concise and try to hit that one compelling theme and not try to hit everything. And I think that's really, that's some overarching advice for the entire conversation we're having today, is that you can't just try to do the buckshot approach when it comes to your website and just throw everything out there and see if it sticks. I think really thinking about some of these things we talked about here, replacing them with some of the newer practices that that you'll learn from some of the things we talk about here at ReachRight, I think that's really the right way to go with this here. So anything else to add today, Ian, before we let people go?
No, I don't, partner. This has all been fun, and hopefully we gave some people a few chuckles and laughs out there too, but more importantly, some good helpful pointers.
Boy, we have been through the ringer, and we have seen just about everything that churches can do on their websites, and I hope this was helpful for you guys. We enjoyed the conversation. Stick around and listen again next week, and we'll catch you then.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Dump.